They don't understand.
It's funny because when you were first bringing it up, I was over here looking for axe razor.
Axe razor.
Because that's what I thought you were saying.
That rolls off the tongue brilliantly.
Axe razor is what I was looking for.
Axe razor.
And then I was like, razor game for SNES.
Razor game.
Yeah, and that's how I found it. Because like, wow. Oh, I was like, oh, act razor.
Welcome to Super Garbage Day, a retro video game review show where my co-host and I are randomly select a game, usually obscure, 20 years or older, that neither of us have played, with hopes to find the treasures in the trash. I am your host, Sir Beef. And to my right is...
Grab your torch and pitchforks, it's Mr. Miller.
Grab your torch and pitchforks, that doesn't make me feel good. Oh. First off, it is Patreon Appreciation Month, so let's just roll that song. Also, we have new patrons, so I want to make sure I give them a shout out. We got Volpe.
Oh, Volpe!
Volpe, who corrected me on my pronunciation of Suikoden or Suikoden. But hear me out, though. I think I've always known
Suikoden.
Suikoden, yeah. I always feel, or not that I always feel. I feel I've been calling it incorrectly since like I played the game, and I think I might have, I have heard people call it Suikoden or Suikoden. Which is the actual way to pronounce it.
Is it a Japanese word?
Yes. Okay. And he's correct in that. But at this point, if I change the way I pronounce it, it's going to feel weird. It's going to mess with my OCD.
I it's Suikoden in Japan. But us Americans, we call it Suikoden. Suikoden?
But no, I appreciate you know, him reaching out and saying he loves the show. And of course, you know, full pay is great. Mike from I Miss the 90s is also a new patron.
Hey!
Appreciate that. He never gave me his game. But...
we'll get it from you eventually. We'll pry it out of your game. Cold, dead hands, Mike.
You gotta put your game in the Patreon pool, man. It's so short. It's only like 9 games in it right now. You have a good choice. Or good choice. Good chance.
It's a choice.
Garage.
Garage.
Also want to give a shout out to Vega. Thank you for joining the patron.
Vega.
Love it. And Lyman Lee. So we gotta give a shout out to Lyman.
Hey, for being Lyman, my boy.
Thank you for being a part. Also, you can catch our first impressions on twitch.tv/supergarbageday. That's where you'll see the first impression video. So we can just prove that we're playing the games and we're just watching a playthrough or something. Also, we do need podcast reviews. So if you are able to leave a review on the platform that you listen to us from, please do that. And we super appreciate that. We got bonus episodes. Just finished one. Just uploaded it. It was... an episode about what is NES hard, about NES hard games that are hardest on that system that everybody talks about. It was really fun to make. And I'm going to announce right now that I am in the market for a website developer because I think we need a website.
That would be nice.
Yeah, I think we just need a website that it won't be something. It doesn't have to be super intricate, just somewhere that also has the episodes and everything. And I could make it, but I don't have the bandwidth. I don't think Mr. Miller and I really have
that's
bandwidth.
Not my forte.
I
could do graphics and all that type of junk, but coding is not my game.
Yeah, I mean, I could do something, but it's not that I don't want to, it's that I don't have the time. And I feel like enlisting somebody who's good at that to help us. Just let me know if it's you or one of your friends or peers, reach out to us. Either through the DMs or supergarbageday@gmail.com. All right, well, that's it for all that. So I'm not ready for this one. Seeky Wisdoms is his retro question of the week. What's a retro regret that you can remember, and why do you still remember it? So I'm trying to figure out what the question is a little bit, like, retro regret as in like something that you've purchased or missed out on or something in the past that happened.
Huh?
I mean, I can tell you, at least from my perspective, is at one point I owned the entire N64 catalog.
That's pretty
physical. Dope. Yeah. And I was like,
it was, what is that, it, like 200 titles?
Yeah. It's like 280 close to, And I spent years building it, and I even had like separate stickers, like you know, aftermarket stickers for the top, because you know the games don't have. So when I had the collection, you can see which games they were and all that. And then it's not really unfortunate. I don't regret it, but I sold it because I found out I was having a daughter.
I mean, there's a good reason to sell it. Yeah.
Which is B. So I was like, oh, I can't really like justify keeping this. But now in retrospect, I'm like, oh, it's worth so much now. But, you know, it doesn't matter. It's trading one thing I love for another. So I guess that would be my answer.
That's a good answer, because I don't have one really. That's retro regret.
It's okay if you don't have one.
I don't really think I do, because I never had retro stuff that I was just, or looking back being like, oh, I wish I had that still.
Well, maybe if you think deep enough, probably. Because if I look really deep, I could think like everything I've owned in the past that I gave to Funko Land or EB Games or GameStop, and I traded it in and realized, like, I've owned physical copies of Earthbound Complete in Box, Suikoden 1 and 2.
Oh, those are worth a grip. I've traded
all of those things in to get new games because I didn't know any better. I wasn't a collector back then. So really everything I did prior to me being a collector is
I think regret. It would be just not finishing and not holding on to my Super Star Wars collection.
Oh,
just being a big Star Wars nerd.
Yeah.
I had Super Star Wars and then Super Empire Strikes Back, but never got Return. That was the hard one to find.
Yeah.
And then I didn't hold on to them, you know, not thinking that it would be a thing.
Of course, that's how it works.
It's like, especially with, you know, I was just, well, if I want to play them again, I'll emulate it or something.
And also, like, the lucky, I don't understand how people, like, they're like, yeah, I'm just going to keep these copies of Little Samson and just see what happens. And like, it ends up being like the $5,000 NES game or whatever
it is. You put it in a box and that goes in your basement and you don't unearth it for years. And you know, you're digging through just trying to find your Christmas decorations. You're like, oh crap, all my old games. And you're like, it was worth a $3 million.
Exactly. Too. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess that's the best we can do for that question. It's a great question. Just, you know, it is.
I regret nothing.
I mean, he regrets nothing. Well, this week's game is ActRaiser on the Super Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yeah!
ActRaiser is a 1990/91, depending on if you were in Japan or North America, hybrid platformer / god game and city building game with light RPG elements for the Super Nintendo Entertainment System, developed by Quintet and published by Enix before they were Square Enix.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah, that's fun.
Combining traditional side-scrolling platformer with urban planning god game sections. What a description, right? Insane. Also, this week, which was kind of cool, is that Seek played this game on his stream, and I checked it out, and I thought it was really cool. Most of the people that were commenting in his stream, like, didn't know what it was, and then everybody kind of had the same opinion. Like, this is out there, like, in a good way, you know? So that's the game this week. As I said before and prior, this was the first Super Nintendo game technically I ever played, because my birthday, when I received my Super Nintendo, I think it was 9. I distinctly remember this memory of my parents having me reach in a bag, and the first thing I grabbed was ActRaiser.
That box.
Like, complete box, yeah. And then I didn't know I was getting a Super Nintendo, but then I was like, oh my God. And then the next time I put my hand in there and pulled out Super Ghouls and Ghosts, and I was like, oh my God. And then my dad comes out with the Super Nintendo, and I was like, oh my God. You know, so strangely enough, though, I think they obtained it used, so I didn't get Super Mario World.
Like, that's
usually comes with the system.
That's funny, because for my experience, we actually got the Super Nintendo for my dad.
Yeah,
that was his. I want to say it was like his 30th birthday present or something.
Really, that's awesome. It's kind of
I might be off on that, but I do remember like going to a Sears.
Yeah.
When those still existed.
Oh, yeah.
And my mom was, you know, looking at it for a birthday present, and they played it religiously for a while, and then it just kind of became mine.
Dude, that's totally the opposite of my childhood. My parents didn't even know how to like play an Atari.
Oh,
they were like, let's just give him this. It's popular. He won't shut up about it. I had a Nintendo Power subscription mm-hmm. because I was like, I had a Nintendo and Genesis as a kid, and they're like, here you go, makes them happy, you know. And I get that now as a parent, like some of the things my children are into is like, I may not be as into, but I super get a big kick out of them being like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's like seeing a revelation to them, you know? Yeah. So that's our game this week. We both played it. We both beat it, and let's go right into first impressions. Okay. I'm very curious because Mr. Miller has been pretty much radio silence this week on his opinion. And I do know you beat it.
I did beat it.
You did beat it. And you didn't know about this game prior to being chosen.
Other than it was super hype.
Like, yeah,
super. It's very beloved.
It is very beloved and super hype. So let's hear your first impressions and just go ahead and break my heart.
So first impressions, it's janky.
It is.
It's way jank. It's
stiff.
It's very stiff. Yeah. Even the graphics, I'm kind of just like, except for like the boss designs, some of the bosses 91. Are cool. Yeah, I know, but then you got how smooth Super Mario World plays.
True.
It's stiff.
It is stiff. It is very, it's reminiscent of, to me, when I think about it's because it's two different games.
What I was comparing it to actually was Super Star Wars.
Really?
Because it looks similar.
Yeah.
But Super Star Wars plays way better.
Also, I would compare it initially to Wizards and Warriors, where like it's very stiff. It's got kind of like weird jump mechanics where you can't really attack while you jump. And also you just have to kind of get used to it a little bit.
I also, you know, get to the first boss, that centaur.
Yeah.
And was just like, okay, this is impossible. And then realized, oh, this is a cheese game.
Yeah,
I just have to cheese every boss, and that's what it was.
Right.
Then we get into the world building, the God Simulator.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Until I realize, no, it's just build a road to the monster den.
Right.
It's not an actual world building simulator. It is
no.
It's just it has the veneer of it, and I can see it being mind blowing when you. Being kind of like a first of its kind game.
Right.
But now, and I think it was because it was overhyped, I was expecting more out of it.
Right.
This is a nostalgia game. I can see.
I agree.
I can see the rose tinted glasses heavy on this one, but
I'm just calling retro tinted glasses.
Retro tinted glasses. Point, yeah. You got your 3D shades with the red and blue.
RTG, man.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, I did. I finished it because I was just going to be like, I'm already so deep. And I got to see what is right. So raved about this game.
What a first impression. You just beat it in your first impression. Well, no. I think that your opinions on the first impression are very valid. This is a game where like I feel like as far as my first impressions are concerned, I'm replaying it. I'm very familiar with this game. And my first impressions happened when I was a kid. And I finally got a Super Nintendo. Never knew this game because how else would I have? Kind of an obscure game, really.
And it just came out. So yeah.
Yeah. And, of course everything's mind blowing to me, but also consider that like I'm going from the NES
right
to the Super Nintendo. So this is the literal first game that I'm playing that is representing the Super Nintendo, at least to me, to my person, to my TV in my environment, instead of looking it through magazines, because there's no internet back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, this is so crazy complex. There's so many layers. This is nuts. The music's different. The graphics are different. Kind of confusing at first. Like when I first loaded the game as a child, and even now, if I were to play it for the first time, I'd be like, if you load the game and you go right into right after you hit start, what kind of game you think it would be based off the first thing it throws at you, which is
I thought it was going to be more of a like a Final Fantasy style,
like RPG, right?
RPG,
yeah. Like right out the gate, it made you like, oh, there's like the whole like a bar of tools, and like this character's talking to me in these boxes. There's a lot of things they're saying, explaining a lot of the lore to me, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be an RPG, like this is crazy, and then it's not, right? Like mm-hmm. right from the, it's actually kind of confusing. I was surprised that most people weren't turned off by that initial screen, because you're like, it doesn't tell you what to do at first. You're like, oh, here's a list of stuff, and you select it, and it's like, no, you can't do that. It's like, well, Then you go to world map and you're like, what am I, like a hot air balloon moving around?
Oh, the city. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, or I'm going to go to this city. And it's like, you can't go here. It's like, what, why would you do that?
Yeah.
Like, just go right into the first level and then go to that second scene.
That would have been better game design.
In a sense though, but I have a lot of theories. I spent this week, not just playing this game, but like diving deep into its background. And I have a theory. None of it's like, nothing was confirmed to me through my research, but a lot of it makes sense in a conspiracy theory way of the development and what this game came
to be. I do know the American version is vastly different as far as namings and everything yes, goes from the Japanese one because of the Satanic Panic.
Oh, and yeah, the religion. Oh, dude, it's super crazy. Mm-hmm. Like the original game. So in this game, you play. Actually, let's just go into gameplay. So in this game, you play as a god that's called back. Well,
kind the maker, of,
the maker, but you're not exactly god, or god,
the master. Sorry, not the maker, the master. Yeah.
And you are called.
Oh, upon, you're supposed to be god, god.
You are. Yes. But you're called upon the world because it's fallen to the hands of an evil leader,
whatever they call them in the American version. I Tanzra. Don't know. Tanzra. Tanzra. Satan.
Tanzra. So the original version of this, the Japanese version, your name is God.
Uh-huh.
And the evil villain's name is Satan.
Yep.
And you're fighting pagan, like most of the enemies. The original idea was that they were pagan.
Yeah, because so like, you fight the centaur, you fight a manticore.
Oh, you fight like even Egyptian, like
you fight a pharaoh head. You fight I don't remember what it's called, but it's a Japanese god. It's the wheel with yes. the fires all like the candles all over. It's
like the opposite of like the Christian viewpoint of like the biblical angels, because
biblically accurate angels.
Biblically accurate angels are terrifying.
Yes,
they're not people with wings.
They're Lovecraftian nightmare. Yeah, things.
They're like 6,000 eyes and like tentacles and stuff. And they're like, I love you. And you're like, kids, ah!
Ah! What? Stop having sex with my wife.
How bad are the demons if you look this way, Mr. Angel? But so like, and also I think one of the biggest changes in the games that I think where Nintendo was like, no, was so there's a point in this game where you have to find these monster dens, and they're represented on the overview map of the building simulation. Oh, the
buttholes in the sky.
Yeah, well, they just look like little circles.
Yeah,
with like some design in them. But on the original game, they were Star of David.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was a smart change.
Yes. Well, the game comes off as
was it? I wonder if they meant it to be a pentagram, which is also wrong.
Right.
It's a wicked
pentagram would have been more fitting, I think, for the original naming conventions of the game. But no, it was a Star of David. So it's like very anti-Semitic. Like,
yeah.
Like, whoa. And Nintendo's like, nope. Like American Nintendo.
Now looking at the face designs too, of like the way, especially in that the end boss run. And just seeing there's distinct noses.
They're Italian.
That would have come off. Yeah. I was just going to say that would have come off real bad.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And plus Nintendo was like just launching the Super Nintendo. I mean, this game wasn't a launch title. I think it came out like a year or two after the launch. But it was right there. It was like, I think Super Nintendo officially launched in 89.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
Okay, because I thought it came out in 91.
I did too for the longest time.
Actually, maybe it hit the States in 91?
Well, my research on this game actually made me realize I had a false memory. I thought it came out in 91 forever until I was like, oh, it came out 89.
Huh.
So,
interesting. Maybe it was finally affordable in 91.
It was
near the end.
It was like that Christmas push.
Right.
So, like, technically, you would say 90s, but or 1990. Yeah, so like the original context of the game was like super religion based,
mm-hmm.
but developed in Japan. So I'm like, weird. But also like Japan allied with Germany in World War II. So maybe it's not that weird.
Well, I actually was having a discussion about this recently with a friend that like when you look at like Japanese media, the weird like ritualistic, crazy, magic religion is Christianity. It's heavy Catholicism,
right?
Because that's the weird one where it's like, you know, we would be like, whoa, I want more with like the Shintoism. I want the weird Japanese stuff. And to them, that's normal
until you get to like Protestant and like and like Mormon, which, you know, I'm not ragging on anybody's faith or anybody's beliefs. Well,
I'm talking,
but the branches of Christianity kind of like they really spur out.
That's what I'm talking about.
I think like Japanese, like
the mythology, though, yeah, because Catholicism has beautiful mythology.
Yeah, it's actually more, I think it's more archaic.
It's because they stole all the cool stuff from the pagans.
And I know.
Just it's funny when you, it.
I mean, even though like you and I kind of like, well, we, I wouldn't say identify, but like, well, we're both fans of Nordic.
No, Sweetaboos, as I've been called.
Sweetaboos, I never heard that. But like, we're both fans of like Nordic mythology and things in our life, and it's part of our culture. Definitely see a lot of things being kind of like inspired by, maybe. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a religious major, but
the saints are obviously all stolen from other pagan gods.
Right. Gods. Yeah. I don't know. Like I don't know, entirely, but I do know that, there's a lot of,
we'll receive emails,
especially maybe not though. Cause if you really look into it, like a lot of religions are all pagan based and like they've been kind of converted to like, but also, if you look far back,
I was raised Roman Catholic, so I know all.
I was raised Baptist Christian, yeah. So you know, I think it's just the things you figure out later on when you start doing research into yourself. You're like spiritual research.
All of the ritual is there.
The rituals are always there.
You got special hats and clothes.
Yeah,
and
like, and you look back in the lore, like Christmas especially,
the holy days of obligation, that's what they were called.
Well, also like so much of the things were.
This has turned into a theology podcast.
Yes, welcome. Welcome to your unsubscribing. I'm kidding. No, I mean, and I'm a spiritual person. I'm not a religious person. So let me put that out there. Like I don't really assign to any religion. I do believe, like, I'm a spiritual person in the sense of like I believe in like love and like higher beings and these things, but I don't think I've crossed that bridge in my life, and I just choose to just respect what people think, as long as it's not based on hate or like judgment.
Yep.
Be that as it may, ActRaiser.
Yeah, ActRaiser is heavily religiously influenced. Super.
This is one of the most religious games, and I didn't realize it till this playthrough and this deep dive. And I was like, this is probably the best religious game ever made, because they could have went the route, like, if you took the mechanics of how this game is made, because you get like four towns. The whole idea is you have this world that is corrupted by evil, and you're coming back down, and you have to like, you can't communicate directly with the people, right? Like, they had pray to you, and then you make things happen, and they respond to it. But there's never a direct communication with the townsfolk.
Right.
Other than, like, help us, and then, like, oh, you make, like, natural disasters happen that benefit mankind growing and, like, evolving. And specifically, that's on the sim building part, because this is two games.
Yeah.
And, of course, you play as, like, it's weird to me, because I'm wondering, like, is ActRaiser kind of a direct... Like, if somebody was to take a holy book of some sort and make it into a video game, ActRaiser would probably be like the closest thing to it, because you're like, okay, so here's the world being ridden of evil and all the problems that come with it, and the prayer and the altars and the changing and the evolution of humans. But also, here's the story of how it happened with like the combat parts and like
the great
monsters and the things you have to beat, and your character's holy and like, you know, and like all knowing is just there to help, you know. And I'm thinking like no other game other than maybe Black and White kind of give me that feeling.
Yeah. I could see that. I think I would have liked it better if, instead of being the god itself, like an animated statue, because that's really how it is. It's like every level starts
your statue,
where your statue and lightning strikes you, and then you become this holy avatar.
Yeah,
it would have been more interesting if each level you played as the avatar of one of your followers. So like, you're as the god being, you possess one of your, or bestow your essence on one of the people in that area. And that's just me just thinking.
But I mean, is that not asking too much of a game that's already way ahead of its time? Like,
well, I'm just saying, if we're like we're going on the religious right. aspect
plus
thing,
it's like they were cutting out, like, Nintendo of America was like, get rid of all this super religious stuff.
Which is so funny. That
and just, it worked, because as a kid, I didn't even see the religious connection until older. And I'm like, yeah. Oh, this game's super religious.
Yeah. Well, getting off the religion aspect, gameplay wise, the combat areas aren't, it's not so bad that I was just like, I'm done with this game.
Right.
I mean, obviously finished it. It's really stiff.
It is very stiff. I agree. That's one of my complaints.
And the magic system is very weird.
I think it's purposely put there just for like boss battles.
It's literally how you beat most of the bosses.
Yeah.
You just stand in a corner and spam star beam or whatever until it's called.
Later on when you're like checked by, you're like, oh wow, the difficulty just ramped the F up. But
the last Yggdrasil level,
yeah,
is specifically what the one I was thinking of. But that boss is a chump.
Yeah.
Most of these bosses are actually really easy.
Yeah, and it makes me wonder about this gameplay because I'll touch on this theory I have a little bit here that like I feel like this developer was creating two games for this new platform and on Seeky Wisdom's stream as he was playing, a lot of people in his chat, somebody in particular said, "Hey," they're like, "What is this game?" And he was showing and he was explaining it, and they said, "This seems like a game that was originally made for the Nintendo, like at least this part." And he was talking about the world building part. Mm-hmm. This person in Seek's chat. And like they just like made it into like Super Nintendo hardware, but also they didn't have enough to make it like a full blown release. But perhaps that same dev team was also making an action game, but it also was kind of like not enough to be a full blown release. And so I'm wondering,
I would 100% believe that
they're like, hey, and like some genius in that development team was like, let's just combine the games and make them like intertwine with each other, even though they are vastly different games. And so I'm kind of seeing that conspiracy theory be a little bit true. I mean, it seems like they're creating a action platformer where they didn't really like, it's not Castlevania. It's not.
No,
it's Streets of Rage. You know, like
it feels like Castlevania 1.
It does. Actually, I believe that. Yeah, it's got that stiffness and that heaviness.
It has that really stiff jump and very specific hit range.
Yeah. But also, it makes me feel like the levels are short, right? The action sections.
They're very short.
They're short, and you get right to the point.
That's also another gripe that I had with the overworld section is there isn't an option to speed things up.
Right.
Because there's a lot of just sitting and just staring at, just waiting for that little hourglass to run out so that they will build more stuff.
Right, right. Or it's almost like a real-time strategy.
Do a thing. Not, yeah. It's like I wanted to like put it on fast mode because I'm not over here micromanaging stuff. It's not like SimCity.
Right.
Like, why am I waiting? It's just an excuse for me to fly around and get bombarded by bats, which...
But you have to kill the bats in order to like raise the SP, which actually helps towards the building process.
If you need it, there's some areas where you don't even... Like, it's true. Once you clear... Like, because... Once you clear out an area of the god powers that are needed, then you're just waiting for Act Two to happen.
But also consider that this is probably the first sim building game on the Super Nintendo.
I get that.
And it's an action game. Like if you,
I can't discount its flaws.
No, I know.
Because of its time.
I'm trying my best to be fair, knowing that like I have a huge nostalgia boner for this game.
Oh, I get it. And that's, yeah. I think it's a good me coming in without the nostalgia boner. Right.
No, it's great. It's a great contrast.
Because
I'm also wondering how my dad chose this game, my late father. I have no idea why he picked this.
He saw a buff dude with a sword and he was like, that's metal.
But the front of it doesn't have that.
No, but at the back would.
Yeah. But so it's probably like, right there, like in the A's, you know. I don't know this and Super Ghouls and Ghosts, which I was like,
whew. But I mean, I could see why he picked it.
Yeah, for sure. It's very metal.
Yeah,
yeah. My dad was.
It's straight up. It's got pyramids and lightning bolts, and it's just like it looked like a heavy metal cover.
And my dad was a big metal head.
The font looks like a heavy metal.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the art design is great in this game. I know that you think that it was kind of like not maybe like unimpressive.
I don't like the main character, the main avatar.
It's a weird. You know, this game has a sequel and they went a whole different direction with it.
I probably would like the sequel better.
I hate the sequel. Oh, so really? You probably would. But yeah, I'll talk about that later.
But the monster design was cool. Like yeah, that centaur, first saw that centaur, I was like, that's dope.
Well, dude, all the enemies in the first level are kind of dope. Like the trees that look like a jigsaw guy.
I thought they were kind of janky.
But everything attacks you. Everything is bad because you're coming into a world of evil. And then you're there to cleanse it and guide people in a way. and then move on to the next place. I felt that the variety was good, though, as far as the gameplay is concerned, because it at least held your attention, right? I feel like the game is a little addictive to where, like, even though you know it sucks to, like, I know.
Oh, I can see. Yeah.
No, yeah, it was.
There's a reason I finished it.
Yeah, you want to keep going forward, and it gave you, it has a little bit of that addictive quality of, like, well, I got to level up, because you level up on one area, and then it affects the other area. Mm-hmm. They're not, like, coincide. You can't level up in the action scenes. Everything you do in the cities is what levels you up to fight
right
in person. So
your patience level, whatever.
Yeah, it's weird. This is weird translation.
I want to say it was like penitence or something before, and they had to change the word because it was
probably
too religiously associated.
Probably like Holy Ghost or something. And they're like, like, dude, we can't do this. Like, Nintendo was really strict on making sure that everything was not too far gone, mm-hmm. like sweat in Mortal Kombat 1 instead of blood.
Yeah, the dust.
The stupidest fatalities ever. Punch him in the chest. So, man, I love that game still, though. Like, having a port of Mortal Kombat from the arcade to home, you didn't care.
You could actually practice your moves, and then you go to the arcade, yeah, and they translate correctly. And so now you know all the special moves.
And also, I was so stoked that I was playing that in my house. I didn't care if the characters were all made in chickens. I'd be like, I don't care. I'm playing Mortal Kombat. Yeah.
Didn't cost me $8 to play. No.
Those are the days. So the game has like four towns that you have to go and cleanse. There's five. The Fillmore, fifth one.
Blood Pool. Aita, there's Northwall. There's one. There's one in between Northwall that I'm forgetting.
Like a weird little one.
And then there's Mada something. It's the island.
Well, it's the one like region. Yeah. There's like the evilest.
Yeah. So six.
Okay. So
let's see. Fillmore, Blood Pool, and Northwall. Yeah, there's six. And then the last one is Deathheim, which is 100%.
It's Deathheim.
Well, okay. And then you went Nordic all of a sudden.
I know. But I feel like perhaps that was a localization thing where like they had to translate it, and they're like, well, Viking mythology is okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, like,
that's not taboo yet.
Yeah, nobody's
oh, wait, the Nazis. That's right.
I didn't even think about that. Oh, you have 12 bosses. Like, there's a good variety of bosses. You have
one per act.
Yeah. Which I think is why it's called ActRaiser. It's a weird name, though. I still to this day don't understand.
It's funny because when you were first bringing it up, I was over here looking for ActRaiser.
ActRaiser.
Because that's what I thought you were saying.
That rolls off the tongue brilliantly.
ActRaiser is what I was looking for.
ActRaiser.
And then I was like, Razor game for SNES.
Razor game.
Yeah, and that's how I found it, because I was like, ActRaiser.
I don't understand the title, and I looked into like though if there was a meaning in it from the Japan, and I just made up the name because it was like everything's an act
that's
in it.
That's really
just raising the act. I don't know if it's fine, like it works. I mean, 90s, whatever.
It's weird.
It's weird. But you get 12 bosses in the last boss, and they're, you know, they're pretty much easy. They're hard at first, and then once you figure it out, you're like, yeah, you just cheese everything.
It's like I said before. Yeah. It's if you've played Legend of Zelda 2,
yeah,
and you've beaten
the best Zelda,
and if you've beaten it, have some words about that. You know how to beat the last boss, and yeah, it's just it you just gotta find the cheese.
You gotta find the cheese, man.
You walk in and you go Stardust.
Yeah, Stardust is
Stardust.
But you get these four you acquire these four spells, and
three of them are useless.
Yes. Stardust is just the boss destroyer.
There's no reason to take any of the other ones.
No.
They don't even really help you in the getting to the boss.
It's weird to me because I feel like they had something there and it just wasn't complete in the action part.
Like the light beam one, you're getting to the boss, helps because it
eradicates people from a distance.
And you absorb health from them.
Yeah.
Which is cool, but it doesn't help you in a boss fight.
No. The boss fights are...
And if you're having trouble with health getting to the boss fight, then you just need to restart the level.
Yeah. It's true. And you will, though. Because death, it comes aplenty until you figure it out. The levels are just like the gameplay in the combat part of the game is very, it's frustrating. It's
I only had a problem with the first level.
Right.
Because I'm just learning the game.
First level, like the literal for oh, the literal first level.
The literal
level.
First like the level. Okay. Yeah. Because you're just learning the game.
Yeah.
And the Idris Elba tree.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That level
sucks. It sucks real hard. Dude, but everything hard. In between is kind of like whatever.
Yeah. And you kind of get the flow by then. Like desert level.
Desert level. I mean,
a lot of caves.
It felt like that desert level in particular. There are even like squares that are stolen straight, or they stole it from ActRaiser from Super Star Wars.
Oh, really?
Like, I'm looking at that. I was like, that is the same texture they use for rocks.
I don't know if this predates it, but
they might have came out around the same time.
One of them is the same publisher. Probably.
They're not.
Okay. No. Oh, it's LucasArts. So
but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is like, I can firmly stand on this
hill. Well, let's go into graphics and audio and see if we can agree somewhere here.
Okay.
Music.
It's dope.
It's good.
You got slap bass in here it's somehow. It's good.
And the music was produced by Yuzo Koshiro. So he was famously, he actually, what's funny is they did a remaster of this game, like remade it completely a couple of years ago. And he was the sound producer for that one.
Too. I was trying to find a gift for you. Yeah. But they're all sold out. I was trying to find a vinyl of this game.
Really? It's funny you bring that up, because I'm in the process of purchasing. Like it's like $30. But I found a Battletoads vinyl that was released.
Yeah.
And it's like the original soundtrack with David Wise, and then it's like metal remakes.
Ooh.
From different metal bands.
They're
all underground.
I want to hear that.
And it's also like it's two vinyls. And it has special artwork and has a pop-up book in it. And I'm like, sick. I've got to own that. Like,
see, this one had it's a two disc or two vinyl.
They're still discs.
Two LP.
They're discs. Set. Yeah.
One is the original soundtrack and the other is the symphonic version of it.
Oh, where they have dude, an actual it's symphony. Already kind of symphonic. I'm surprised.
But yeah, they have a full symphony play it.
That's so cool.
And it came with all the concept art, which is real sick.
That's dope. See, but the problem is, I own these things. I won't want to open them because I'm like, as much as I want to. But
yeah, it was sold out. It's out of print now. Oh, unfortunately,
then it's gonna be $1 million.
And I was like, I'm not paying $1 million. No. It's like, I'll buy you a $60 vinyl.
What the patrons are for, man. but yeah, it's the music is it's top notch. This made it. This was number 7 in my SNES best soundtracks, because the music is so good. There's even a part in the game where people are sad in a town that you once like you salvaged, and you come back to that town and people are sad. And then in another part of the game, people learn music. And you can take that song over to the other town. And
that's how you make them happy again.
So you make them happy. That song's a bop, though, man. I was like, well, it's kind of a weird, like, Footloose sounding song. But I thought the music is fantastic. We may not be in the same camp about graphics. I think the graphics for the time period are great. I think the sprites are wonderful. Everything is. There's a lot of diversity. Like, you don't play this. The levels don't look really the same.
I think they are decent.
Yeah.
I just don't agree with some of the design choices.
Yeah.
I think some of them are very boring, but when they're good, they're great. But you know, there is some recoloring problems where it's like, oh, this one, it looks exactly the same as the other one, only he's blue.
What's the term for that? God, it escapes me right now. But
and I know it's a way of
RPGs like, did that a lot.
It's a way of saving
resources,
RAM, and
stuff. You also got to think, this game also had mode 7. Like, when you go into a fight, it starts from the top of the sky and spins and goes down with this epic sound, and it's like showing off that mode 7 chip that was just like implemented into Super Nintendo games. So I'm wondering, like, how far stretched this game's hardware was, like the actual cartridge, where like we can't fit anything else in.
Yeah, it was, like, it's probably maxed out.
And I also feel that I think the ending is awesome. Like, I think that's a way to end a game. Like, because, you know, yeah, especially when you play a lot of these other games where, like Bad Mojo's ending was funny to me. We didn't talk about that in the Bad Mojo episode. I wish we would have, because the ending's hilarious.
I thought we did.
No, we did, actually. No, what am I confusing that for? One of these games. I'll take this out, because it's not Bad Mojo. No, it was Bad Mojo. We didn't talk about how, like, no matter what happened, you just still, like, went off. Like, it didn't matter. Like, The good ending was you and meeting your dad. Oh, well,
yeah, you always just run away. But
it's, you meet your, like, the good ending is your dad.
You save your dad.
And then you guys are on a beach drinking martinis, but everything's still, like, the apartment building still burned down.
Well, yeah, because you still had all that money you stole from the bank, so.
I know, so there was no good.
Or from your company. There's no truly morally good ending.
I'll have to look back and say, I think we may have discussed that.
Because we did talk about that.
Yeah, we're at a point now in podcasting that I'm, like, not remembering things from other episodes. And I'm, like, blindly being like, we didn't talk about this. I'm like, oh, yeah, we did.
Oops.
Whoops. But, you know, graphics and audio, I think for the time, you know, 90, 91. It's just such a weird game. It's the game is, as far as, like, gameplay and graphics and audio, it was, like, I don't want to say ahead of its time, but it was really reaching for something.
Well, as I said before, yeah, it is mind blowing for the time. Yeah. I will give it that.
And they never made another one like this.
But that doesn't excuse the jank.
It's true. Yeah, and I feel like
I would have rather they made two polished games.
Well, you should play ActRaiser 2. Okay. Because they get rid of the entire world building part and just focus on the side scrolling.
See, and that's the worst part.
Yeah, but if you put all the focus in that.
Yeah, but it's still.
I was mad because I wanted, when ActRaiser, I came across ActRaiser 2, and it was just completely an action game, which, by the way, that game's graphics are unbelievably good.
I'll have to give it a shot because I have it.
And it's different. It doesn't even feel like a sequel. So it's like a completely different game, but because all the focus is on the action platforming.
So
but the world building, I like it because it's a little nice little, like, that's the part I like doing it. So that's the comfy part of playing the game, like do, you know, and having to, like, kind of micromanage what you're doing and then wait. But there's little parts that are kind of puzzly where you have to figure things out and you can find secret things that give you more lives or give you, like, the bomb that clears the screen, or
it's mostly just waiting.
I'm back in gameplay
until your population gets high enough. It's a lot of just staring at. I
that's how you level up, which is weird to me too.
I know, because
they tied it in a weird way.
Going to the final boss run, I was just like, "Oh, I'm not chunky enough. I guess I'll go grind out more people."
So the last boss, are the last part of the game, I think is as it should be, is the hardest part, and those spells aren't helping you at that part. You have to ration your magic use there, because if you just start firing from the hip.
First boss, use a spell. Just kill him right out.
It's easy.
But Joe, just don't waste your time. Just kill him with a spell.
Okay.
Because you can do one starburst and then hit him like two times and he dies.
Yeah.
Just so you have more health for the rest of it.
Right. What you need.
Second boss, you can fight him entirely without spells. He's a pushover.
Yeah.
The magician that turns into a werewolf.
Yeah, the Dracula, it turns into a wolf. Yeah.
Third boss is that the Pharaoh?
Yes.
I think it is the Pharaoh, yeah. Starbeam him down too.
Yes.
Just hit him immediately and then hit him a couple times and he's dead.
But you might want to save those for that one boss that where it has, like, the moving platforms and you have to.
The third boss.
Yeah.
Or for the fourth boss, the wheel. There's a specific pattern you can do where you just whack him.
Just whack him right off, man.
You just whack him off, man. But you can do it without, that's the no hit boss. You can do that without getting touched.
Right.
So
it's kind of time consuming.
That's when you save your spells. I mean, but that's the problem with cheese bosses. It's like Dark Souls. You just have to pick your punches.
Yeah, it's true.
Then the fifth and sixth boss, that's where you burn your spells.
Yep.
That's where you blow your load. Just get rid of I don't even know what he's supposed to be. He's like an Egyptian, or not Egyptian, Indian style god. It's like almost like Kali-esque.
Yeah.
And then the ice dragon.
Ice dragon's the worst.
He's
of them.
Not that hard. It's very, very time consuming.
Yeah, it takes the longest to beat him.
If you do it just with the sword, you're probably gonna be running out of time.
But then you get that epic last boss fight, man.
That last boss fight is hilarious because it does just turn into, I swing my sword.
Yeah, I know. It's easy, but it's like, I like the build up to it. Mm-hmm. And then at a point they were like, man, they didn't really balance out that boss rush well. But I liked the aesthetics of it. I was like, other than it's like rapid firing bosses at you, you know. I do like the last fight because it really felt like, especially the first time I beat this is when I was younger, and when you finally beat it, you're like, and it makes you feel like I'm on the top of the hill and the evil's gone, and like the parallax scrolling in the back is kind of dope, and like, but then again, I'm a fanboy, so it's a
it became a quest. It was just like I'm just gonna finish it so I can give my full true.
Did you like the ending?
I am going to disappoint you as soon as I beat it, and I recorded that video just so I could prove to you, and I turned away and did something else.
Watch the whole thing where it goes over.
I saw it was like talking about the towns, and I'm just like, I don't really care about you people.
That's fair. You powered through it, and I appreciate that. One of the takeaways in the ending you may have missed though at the very end is when you go back to it's actually kind of epic. And the music like has its own like ending music.
Well, I was listening to the soundtrack the entire time.
But it goes through all the towns where you affected it, and it gives you an update on what's happening with them.
Okay.
And it goes at the very end, it goes all the way back to the first town. And it goes into the people, and they're not there anymore. Like the people at the altar, because they no longer need God because they're so prosperous. And so I was like, "Whoa,
well, okay,
that's kind of nuts." Like, yeah. So the whole idea is like they've gone so far that they no longer even pray.
Okay. Oh, wow. And I was like, and then they repeat the cycle again because that's the whole reason why
you missed that, man. That's what made it's like a little weird of a twist ending where it's like you did all this. And they don't believe in you anymore because now they're doing well.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh,
nope. I immediately went back to checking on my renders and seeing how my homework was doing.
I went back to checking on my tenders and seeing if they were ready to eat.
I ain't got time.
All right. Verdict. So, we know my side of this, it's hard for me to, I will be honest. Replaying it, I've realized there are a lot of faults, and definitely I fanboyed a little bit. Looking back on it, yeah, there's the combat parts are the weakest links, the action parts. The controls are stiff, and you have to get used to them. At one point, you get frustrated when you die to like cheap deaths. You gotta start, and the checkpoints are kind of weird and suck. And then some of the city building gets kind of hectic near the end, the last couple cities where you have to really micromanage because these enemies that end up in the city building part can just like decimate your crops, decimate your city. And
it doesn't matter in the long run.
I know it doesn't matter in the long run, but you don't know that at first.
The most important thing about the city building is where your bridges are placed, because I got soft capped out of max level because I had too many bridges.
Oh no, really? Well, then you can also destroy. There's a part in the game where like you can't
destroy bridges.
You have to destroy towns to make it like for the better good.
I was literally going through all of my cities at the end of the game and just earthquaking them so that all the shitty houses would go away
and they would build the new better ones. Houses. And I was like, that's weird too. Like, I'm wondering, like, there's probably I wish I knew Japanese so I could play the original version of this, because I bet you it's crazier. Like, at least with its lore. Like,
I was 50. I was like, no, exact numbers. I was 46 population below max level.
Really?
Yeah. And I was soft cap because
you bridged out too much, man. Because,
well, I was just, you know, like, yeah, I'll just go here. There is a perfect path.
Right.
To go.
And you figure it out. I played it enough to where like Fillmore and Bloodpool are just like, I can do it with my eyes closed. Like, just knowing how to, you know,
but also
how to menu it.
Saying, I mean, I'm decent at games.
Yeah.
But the first playthrough, and I almost have the whole thing figured out.
Of course. And it's also, I think it's also a game that it had like a save feature. Also has a new game plus. I don't know if you knew this.
Yeah. Professional mode.
Professional mode is the Japanese version. Did you know that?
I did not.
So the Japanese version is harder and more expansive on the combat part and easier on the world building. But when it came here, they switched it.
Interesting.
And so, yeah, it's weird. Everything about this game is odd. I really think. I still love it. I'll always love it. I know we're not going to see eye to eye on this one, but I'll defend this game forever because it's such a big part of my history. And I see its flaws. And I'm just going to say I love it. And you can go ahead and break my heart.
Well, that's why I said grab your torch and pitchfork, because I know they're coming for me.
I know you said the first part of this episode.
I already knew.
I don't know if they'll come for you. A lot of people don't know about this game. Everybody who played it alongside us from our community never even heard of it, except for other Brian Ross who suggested it.
Though a lot of people have very fond memories of this game.
Yeah.
And I think it's a nostalgia game. I really do. It's okay. It's playable, and I did want to finish it. But will I say, oh, you have to play this game? Probably not.
That's fair.
I would say, oh, ActRaiser. Yeah, I played that once.
Yeah.
And
well, you know of it now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, what would you think? I mean, it's okay.
Do you think it deserves, other than the remake, like a true sequel?
I actually think with current tech.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And if you actually made the real, like if you went in and made it like Civ or SimCity or something where your decisions actually matter, and then like really tighten up, like make it like God of War combat.
God, that would be so hard to make though.
Well, it'd be hard.
It would take such a budget.
Would it be worth it? Yes.
Yeah.
Then it would be like, this is the greatest game ever.
Right. Or just up there.
Because even Black and White kind of tried. They got close.
But they were tongue in cheek.
And kind of, sort of. It depends on how you played it too. Because that one gave you a lot of play.
A lot of freedom.
God of War, or not God of War, Black and White 2 kind of ruined it.
Really?
Yeah.
I never played Black and White 2.
That's why Black and White is Abandonware now. Because it's beloved. You can't buy it legit anymore.
Right? Oh, just
because EA locked it down. It's like Alice.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, oh, the one that people liked, we're like, no, but play the new one. Cause that's the direction we want to go. And they're like, no, but the new one sucks.
I hope some new CEO gets elected in EA and he's like, just F's up everything. He's like, everything is now free licensing. All these like things that they have like strangleholds on, like Alice and Black and White and all that, because those are great. Those are great franchises. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, I give it it's okay.
That's fine. That's fair.
Let's see, what's a trash reference I can get in there?
It's a game.
It's an itchy sweater.
It
might have a
never couple, short of the trash references.
It might have a couple of mildew spots on it or but something. You're cold. But you're cold and grandma gave it to you. And
it's about
to
start raining.
You just ignored it forever. So it's like if you need to, it'll keep you warm.
At least try out the second one for I just want to know your opinion now on it, because it's so different and it's so much more like 80s metal themed.
Okay.
It's like it went into like the guy now is like has full blown wings and no shirt and is ripped with a giant sword and like full Fabio goose to the face.
So yes, Fabio reference came back.
Bass is Black Bass. So all right.
You had to get it in there.
Okay, so we're gonna pick a new game. Let's go. Okay, so hold on, let me look up the I knew this was coming one of these days. We were gonna have to cross this bridge.
Did we get Bayou Billy?
So our game is Bayou Billy.
Yeah. it happened.
Adventures of Bayou Billy by Konami on the NES is our game this week. Patreon pick from Cappy 74. So
I would make it as a big old bowl of Creole this week.
We'll be playing Bayou Billy. By the way, if I can score a copy of this, I can play this game legitimately on the NES with both the controller and the light gun, because I have both.
Be on my own.
Yeah, we'll see.
Next time when you see me, you ain't on me. You don't see it. I'm on phone, man. I grew up in the South, boy. I don't want to say anything.
You would get punched in the face if you're in Louisiana right now.
Me on me.
Me on me on here. Me on garage. All right. Bayou Billy next week. Thank you guys for hanging around and listening to the show all the way up until here. My heart's broken, but it's still there. The flesh is willing, but spongy and bruised. So join me and Mr. Miller next week when we go down to the bayou with our homie Billy.
Hey boy!
Cut to B. Bye!
Thank you for watching with my dad. I just want to say everybody, guys, bye!